Welcome to New York, Quebec, and the water route to the center of the world. This is bonus episode 10, where two rivers meet. Let's weave a tale that will tie together the Battle of White Plains, Diedrich Knickerbocker, the Phillips' patroon ship, and Algonquin Hudson River sacred legend. The Pocantico is a serene country river that meanders through the mystical village of Sleepy Hollow as it carries along the enchanted tales and rich history of the Hudson Valley, all the way until it meets the great Mahicantuck, or river that flows both ways. It is at this very site where the Delaware peoples tell of the birth of this mighty river and the eternal dance it performs with the Pocantico. The legend states, at the point in which the Pocantico River meets the Hudson, a giant lay across the river and had turned it into a lake to the north. The local Delaware peoples had been forgetful in their duty to provide proper thanks to the giant, whom promptly got up to protest the slight. When the giant stood up, the lake suddenly flowed south and met the ocean, but the ocean pushed back until the tides were established. The river that flows both ways is all the while constantly trying to reach Pocantico, but could never stop the constant back and forth tidal flow movement. A set of falls separated the two rivers from ever being intermingled, but when the Thunderbirds would fight, the flap of their wings sent the Mahicantuck up over the falls and into the Pocantico. When the storm finally subsided and the Mahicantuck had receded, fresh silt and dead eels fertilized the growth of an enormous tree, under which the local tribe held sacred gatherings. Many years would pass as the sacred tree grew strong and tall, but suddenly one day some foreigners sailed by this very spot on a floating house with brilliant colors. The Dutch had arrived by the start of the 17th century and set about scraping out a living on the tip of the island of Manhattan and amongst the wilds of the northern interior along the Hudson. As this freewheeling entrepot grew from extraction to settler colony, women like Margaret Phillips played a key role in helping to establish the land grant system and promoting the region's key role in the burgeoning international trade of both people and commodities. Dutch law allowed her to work out a prenuptial after inheriting her husband's previous shipping business interests. This arrangement facilitated her to combining forces with Frederick Phillips. He rose to be the top carpenter for the WIC and Peter Stuyvesant, who were in desperate need of skilled labor. Reaffirming loyalty under English rule in 1664, Frederick and Margaret made a series of land purchases in Lower Westchester. These included the main resident and mill in Yonkers and the upper mill on the Pocantico. Both were in Phillips' hands by the end of the 17th century. The mills, surrounding acres, and water access allowed the Phillips to export grain to the Caribbean and exchange manufactured implements for slaves and spices in Madagascar. The Phillips dynasty would control the area for the next 75 years as rent lords and become representative of the Dutch merchant class transition to landed gentry supporting English rule. Frederick Phillips III inherited the property in 1751, but he didn't have much interest in it. He agreed to lease out the upper mills and was content to live luxuriously on the Yonkers Manor, surrounded by the accoutrements available to the elite of the British Empire. By the time of the Revolution, he had gotten himself thrown in prison by rebel authorities for organizing a loyalist conspiracy from his Yonkers property in 1776. He was paroled, but then was caught sending letters to the British in New York. This discovery forced him to flee to British lines, and his properties were auctioned off to tenants after the war. Still, the sacred tree grew strong and tall on the edge of the Phillipsburg Manor. This mighty arboreal sentinel would witness another battle rage close by amongst the white misty swamps of Coropus, or what the colonists called White Plains. Phillips had required his tenants sign a loyalty oath to keep their lease. So many saw the rent lord as the epitome of British imperial hubris and joined the rebellion. Some witnessed the disastrous defeat at Long Island, the miraculous escape across the East River, and the dogged rearguard actions against British landings in Westchester to follow up their victory. Howe aimed to end the rebellion by striking at the supply depot located at White Plains, but Washington had the wherewithal to retire this to the Hudson Highlands. The only issue was the British were quickly closing in, and Washington had to buy time for those precious supplies to reach safety. It would be at Chatterton Hill astride the Bronx River, where the rebel army would make its stand. Local militia would have swelled Washington's ranks, and talk would have circulated concerning the fearsome Hessians amongst the army. This would have surely been picked up by the former Phillips tenants, now volunteering as militia members against this fearsome opponent. Early in the morning, having taken our positions, we discovered at a distance the approach of the British Army. Its appearance was truly magnificent. A bright autumnal sun shed its full luster on their polished arms, and the rich array of dress and military equipment gave an imposing grandeur to the scene, as they advanced in all the pomp and circumstance of war to give us battle, stated American Captain William Hull. Aligned in a semicircle and occupying a set of hills, slightly northwest of the British position of White Plains, Washington had just ordered the occupation of the far right or southern portion of the defenses at Chatterton Hill on the morning of October 28, 1776. The relative steepness of this hilly terrain and the utter horror it would have been to scale this under fire would soon be willed into reality. American batteries opened fire first and scored several direct hits amongst the determined British attempting the ascent. Hessian soldiers were able to outflank the militia placed on the far end of the line by using a ford south of their position. As this flanking maneuver commenced, the militia also faced an attack by British dragoons. This is the point where stories of carnage amongst the local militia members grew and developed as they made a retreat shielded by unfavorable weather conditions for a British pursuit. As the war faded into memory, the land of shaded hollows and glens continued to be protected under the watchful eye of the sacred tree that grew where the two rivers meet. Author Firth Haring Fabban writes about the new Dutch hybrid character. He was ambivalent and American, with the hundreds of sandstone houses built in Bergen and Rockland County long after the American Revolution, representing his misgiving about America and becoming American. By rejecting America's demand for newness, innovation, and change, the Dutch farmer was rejecting the very spirit of progressivism that impelled him to be American. In doing so, he was rejecting all the violence that newness, innovation, and change has wrought upon an older ideal that had ended by dividing and damaging his family, church, and community. Historian and folklorist Jonathan Kruk thinks this is the world Washington Irving immersed himself in during the early 19th century. Kruk believes Irving's impetus to create the tale was born out of tragedy. Having experienced devastating personal loss, he was invited by a friend to summer in Kinderhook and was immersed into the Dutch New York world. His literary settings began to take shape, and especially the character of the Headless Horseman, which combined the old tenant soldier tales of haunted battlefields and a local custom that used mischief to encourage couples to finally tie the knot. In one apparent instance, a man in a soldier's uniform scared the very man Irving befriended into marrying his local beau. There is little doubt, though, that the Pocantico plays a crucial role, and the mystical quality of the land was evident to Irving during his time at his cottage in Sunnyside on the Hudson. Phillips Manor itself serves up the background to the fictional narration of Knickerbocker and the old Dutch church, providing the place of supposed refuge from the spirit that haunts the hollow. Irving plays off the various Dutch surnames, and a compilation of boweries or Dutch homesteads are used to build the village of Sleepy Hollow from the ground up. He also knew of the possibility that Hessian soldiers were buried within the old Dutch church graveyard and made some loose connections between tenant family lore and the burial of these deceased German mercenaries. Washington Irving's fame grew ever larger due to his rich Dutch-inspired tales of the Hudson Valley, yet still the ancient tree stood astride the Pocantico. Surely inspiring Irving and countless others, the sacred tree finally fell at the beginning of the 20th century. Though when tropical moisture from the Atlantic sends great winds and waves crashing into New York, the Hudson continues to meet with the Pocantico. As Jonathan Kruk recounts, Phillipsburg Manor was almost completely destroyed in 2003 during Hurricane Floyd, when the Hudson and Pocantico once again met and remade the world. Thank you for listening to New York, Quebec, and the Water Route to the Center of the World.